Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're tackling something really fundamental. The intricate dance between stress and how your body naturally keeps itself in check. You've sent over some fascinating articles looking at stress, the autonomic nervous system, and, you know, how they're all connected.
Yeah, it's a deep topic.
So our goal in this deep dive is really to extract the key insights. How does stress truly affect your body's ability to find its equilibrium and heal? We want to give you a clearer, sort of more grounded understanding of these complex processes.
Absolutely. It's a truly crucial area.
Okay, let's unpack this then.
Well, as your sources really illuminate, the autonomic nervous system, or ANS, is kind of the silent operator in your body.
Right.
It's constantly regulating things you don't even consciously think about. Your heart beating, your digestion working, even blood flow in your brain and like how your cells renew.
Background operations.
Yeah. Think of it as the body's internal management system handling all those essential background tasks.
And this ANS has those two main branches, doesn't it? The sympathetic and the parasympathetic. It's like an internal push-pull.
Precisely. The sympathetic nervous system is your body's get-up-and-go mode. It prepares you for action, often triggered by stress.
Fight or flight.
Exactly. And the parasympathetic nervous system, closely linked to the vagus nerve, is the flip side, the rest and digest mode, focused on recovery and rebuilding.
Okay.
What's fascinating, as your sources detail, is that this balance isn't arbitrary. The solar plexus, that dense network of nerves in your upper abdomen, and the adrenal glands are key orchestrators in this delicate interplay.
So it's more than just nerves and hormones sending signals then. I noticed the sources touched on other ways the body communicates.
That's a really insightful observation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Your readings emphasize a broader perspective.
Mm.
Beyond the, you know, well-known roles of the nervous system and hormones, information also flows through what's known as Pischinger's basic system, essentially the gel-like substance that surrounds all your cells, and importantly, through the fascial network.
Ah, fascia. That comes up a lot.
It does. Fascia, that interconnected web of connective tissue that envelops everything from your organs to your muscles, isn't just structural support. It's also a major communication pathway.
Yeah.
And the navel, that central point on your abdomen, acts as a key anchor for this fascial system, connecting directly to those stress-sensitive organs and the solar plexus.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting for me. When this finely tuned autonomic system gets overwhelmed by stress, what happens then? It's got to be more than just feeling tense.
Oh, absolutely.
Hmm.
The sources are quite clear that excessive stress can lead to a breakdown in the ANS's regulatory capacity, a regulatory disorder, essentially.
Right.
And the consequences can extend far beyond just tight muscles or a stiff neck. We're talking about a potentially weakened immune system, like more frequent colds or slower recovery.
Okay, yeah.
The sources also point to an increased risk of arteriosclerosis and even heart attacks, the development of gastrointestinal ulcers.
Ulcers, wow.
That persistent feeling of chronic fatigue, a dip in libido, and a whole range of psychosomatic illnesses where the mind and body interact in negative ways.
Hmm.
The material even suggests accelerated aging as a possible long-term effect.
Wow, that's a really extensive list. It really drives home how deeply stress can impact us at a fundamental level.
It truly does.
Now, when we think about stress, a lot of us immediately jump to external pressures, work deadlines, financial worries, that kind of thing.
Sure, the obvious stuff.
But your sources make a strong case that internal factors are just as significant, maybe even more so.
That's a crucial point to grasp.
Yeah.
While external stressors are certainly impactful, your body can be carrying a significant load of internal stress without you even realizing it.
Like what, for example?
Well, consider the lingering impact of old traumas. Those unresolved emotions that your sources indicate can be stored within the fascial network.
Stored in the tissue.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. And even physical issues like long-standing scars or restrictions in key joints like your head, jaw, or ankles, often related to posture, can act as persistent internal stressors.
Posture, okay.
Think about the constant barrage of sensory input from our screens and noisy environments. That's chronic sensory overload.
Oh, yeah. Definitely feel that sometimes.
Then there are the strains on your immune system from recurring infections or allergies and imbalances in your gut due to diet or other factors. All of these contribute to this internal burden.
And the cumulative effect of this internal strain makes us less able to handle whatever external stressors life throws our way, right? It's like our baseline for stress tolerance is already lower.
Exactly. When your internal systems are already working overtime due to these underlying stresses, your capacity to adapt to new external pressures is significantly reduced.
That makes sense.
The sources then go on to detail those external causes, which include the obvious mechanical stresses like heavy lifting or prolonged sitting in awkward positions.
Desk jobs.
Right. But also those less visible psychological stresses, those unprocessed emotions, both your own and even the emotional stress emanating from people around you.
Picking up on others' stress.
It seems so. It's quite striking how the sources also touch on the idea that old traumas and even everyday stress can affect our energetic environment, almost like a subtle field of information surrounding the body, where these unprocessed emotional vibrations can get stored in the fascia, creating what are described as energetic disturbances.
Okay, so it sounds like whether the initial trigger is internal or external, any kind of stress can set off this cascade by overloading the autonomic nervous system.
That's the idea.
And the sources keep mentioning the HPA axis, the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis, as the main pathway for this overload.
Okay, let's really dig into the stress response mechanism itself. Mm-hmm. What actually happens in our bodies when we encounter something our brain perceives as stressful?
Right. So your sources describe the initial stress response as a deeply ingrained, almost prehistoric fight or flight mechanism that's orchestrated by the ANS.
When your brain detects a stressor, it sends signals down your spinal cord to the sympathetic trunk. This then triggers the inner part of your adrenal glands, the adrenal medulla, to release those well-known stress hormones, adrenaline and noradrenaline.
The immediate rush.
Exactly. This leads to that immediate cascade of effects. Your heart rate increases, your blood pressure rises, and you get a surge of readily available energy as your body prepares to take action. Think of it as your body instantly shifting resources to deal with a perceived threat.
That's the quick, immediate response, but there's also a slower, more sustained hormonal response that kicks in too.
Correct. Simultaneously, the pituitary gland releases ACTH, which then signals the outer part of your adrenal glands, the adrenal cortex, to release cortisol.
Ah, cortisol, the famous one.
The famous one, yeah. And cortisol has a more widespread and longer-lasting influence. It inhibits the production of proteins, which are essential for cell repair and regeneration.
Not good long-term.
No. And it actually promotes the breakdown of proteins in tissues like your bones, muscles, and lymphatic system. It also puts a temporary hold on non-essential functions like digestion and even your sex drive.
Right.
While at the same time mobilizing blood cells and increasing blood clotting factors, preparing for injury, essentially.
It sounds like a system perfectly designed for, you know, short-term emergencies, like running from a tiger.
Exactly. Very effective for that.
But what happens when this state of alert becomes our new normal, when this response becomes chronic, especially in terms of our immune system, which relies on building and repairing?
Yeah, that's where the system backfires. The sources paint a clear picture of how chronic stress takes a significant toll on your body's defenses.
How so?
Well, firstly, cortisol directly dampens the activity of the thymus gland, a key organ in immune function, by hindering protein synthesis in lymphatic tissues and reducing the inflammatory response.
So it suppresses the immune system.
Directly, yes. Secondly, that regulatory imbalance in the solar plexus and adrenal glands leads to reduced blood flow to vital organs, impaired muscle tone in your internal organs, and a decreased rate of new cell formation, particularly in the lining of your intestines, where a large part of your immune system resides.
Affecting the gut, too. Okay.
Thirdly, stress disrupts the protective function of your connective tissue, making it less effective at supporting those cleanup cells that remove debris and weakening its role as a barrier against foreign invaders.
So the fascia barrier is weakened.
Mm-hmm. And finally, at a metabolic level, chronic stress can impair your body's ability to absorb essential nutrients and oxygen, while also hindering the removal of waste products and toxins at both the cellular and organ levels.
Wow. So it hits on multiple fronts.
It really does. The sources even draw a connection between prolonged stress and an increased susceptibility to allergies, autoimmune diseases, and even cancer.
That's heavy. And it's not just the immune system that suffers under chronic stress, right? The sources really emphasize the impact on our connective tissue, this fascia we were talking about earlier.
Right.
How does persistent stress affect this intricate network?
Yeah, the fascia takes a hit too. Both ongoing systemic stress and localized stress, like from an injury or repetitive strain, can activate specialized cells within your connective tissue called myofibroblasts.
Myofibroblasts, okay.
This activation leads to the laying down of more collagen fibers, resulting in the formation of adhesions and a general stiffening of the fascia. Stiff, tight tissue.
Like knots and restrictions.
Exactly. Over time, this can even lead to the deposition of calcium within the tissue.
Calcium deposits, wow.
Yeah, and the consequences of this are a reduction in metabolic activity within the affected tissues, decreased flexibility and range of motion, and an overall decline in resilience.
So it makes the tissue weaker in a way.
Less adaptable, certainly. So your tissues become more vulnerable to further stress and injury, perpetuating this really problematic stress spiral.
A vicious cycle. Now, the sources make a really important distinction between eustress and distress. Can you break that down for us? Because not all stress is bad, right?
That's a critical distinction. Absolutely. Oh. Think of eustress as the beneficial kind of stress, the type that challenges you and can actually enhance your performance.
Like preparing for a presentation or a race.
Exactly. But only when you have adequate time for recovery afterward. It's that feeling of being energized by a challenge.
Right.
Distress, on the other hand, is the harmful kind of stress that throws your body's self-healing mechanisms out of whack.
The chronic, overwhelming kind.
Right. And the consequences of distress, as the sources outline, are significant. Those fatty acids that get mobilized for energy but aren't used, they can contribute to the buildup in arteries, increase the risk of heart disease. The increased production of stomach acid can lead to ulcers.
We mentioned ulcers earlier, yeah.
As we've discussed, it disrupts immune function. It also leads to that connective tissue dysfunction, causing all sorts of musculoskeletal problems.
Aches and pains.
Definitely. Furthermore, vital organs, your skin, and even your sexual organs can experience a reduced supply of blood and nutrients, potentially leading to psychosomatic issues like a decreased libido.
It affects everything.
Pretty much. At a cellular level, it impairs the processes of repair and regeneration, essentially speeding up the aging process.
Wow.
And those ANS regulatory issues can result in the persistent dominance of either the sympathetic or parasympathetic nervous system, neither of which allows for a healthy state of balance, just stuck in one mode.
It's quite sobering to consider the far-reaching effects of prolonged negative stress. The sources even touch upon the potential impact on unborn children, which is particularly concerning.
Yes, that's a really critical point highlighted in the material. Maternal stress hormones can unfortunately have negative consequences for developing fetuses.
How so?
Potentially increasing the risk of later issues like depression and anxiety, as well as intellectual and concentration difficulties, by interfering with healthy brain development and sleep patterns.
That's significant.
And given the established link between stress and the immune system, there's also a higher likelihood of autoimmune issues developing in those children later in life.
Wow.
Furthermore, the sources detail the distinct psychological symptoms associated with a chronically overactive sympathetic nervous system. Things like hyperexcitability, irritability, anger, even panic attacks.
Feeling wired and anxious.
Exactly. Versus a dominant parasympathetic state, which can manifest as persistent exhaustion, feelings of depression, burnout, and a sense of alienation or detachment.
Just completely drained and shut down.
Two sides of the same coin of imbalance.
This leads us into the perspective of integral orthopedics that's presented in the sources. How do they specifically view stress and its primary ways of showing up in the body? It sounds like they focus a lot on the physical manifestations.
They do. Integral orthopedics offers a really interesting lens, viewing increased tension within the fascial system as the body's initial and primary response to stress.
Fascial tension first.
Yeah. They see this fascial tightness as intimately connected to irritation of both the central nervous system and the autonomic nervous system, as well as an impairment in the way tissues conduct signals and exchange information within that fundamental connective tissue matrix.
So it messes with communication.
Right. They also emphasize the significant role of what they term disruptive fields, particularly scars from injuries or surgeries.
Scars as disruptive fields.
Yes, in triggering stress responses and limiting our overall resilience to future stressors. And they highlight the navel as a central coordinating hub for this complex neurohormonal and fascial reaction to stress.
The navel again. Interesting. This idea of disruptive fields is fascinating. The sources also mention how joint misalignments and even energetic disturbances can play a role.
Yes. Trauma-related misalignments in your joints, often stemming from that persistent sympathetic nervous system activation, can themselves overload the ANS.
So the joint problem feeds back into the stress system.
Exactly. And various traumas, including surgical procedures, can leave behind these energetic disruptive fields, essentially unprocessed emotional and energetic residues that continue to place a burden on the body and mind.
Mm-hmm.
The sources specifically point out the impact of head injuries, whiplash, and Coxsackie's injuries, as well as misalignments of the jaw, on the ANS.
Why those specifically?
Because there are close anatomical and functional connections to the parasympathetic nervous system and the craniosacral system. Even seemingly unrelated factors like a buildup of toxins within the basic cellular environment, potentially due to dietary issues or gut imbalances, can place an additional load on our body's regulatory mechanisms.
So diet and gut health are part of the picture too.
Absolutely. It's all connected.
And integral orthopedics seems to outline a sort of hierarchy or different levels in how the body manifests the stress.
Exactly. They describe several interconnected levels of stress reaction. The first is a generalized state of rigidity within the ANS due to that overstimulation of the HPA axis, just overall stiffness in the system. The second involves localized disturbances in specific spinal segments that are in close proximity to overloaded nerve centers in the abdomen.
Like nerve centers getting jammed up.
Sort of. The third level highlights the pelvic twist as a primary pattern of stress and imbalance in the muscles around the hips that might have initially been a primal preparation for fight or flight.
A pelvic twist, huh?
Yeah. However, in cases of prolonged stress, the body can become so exhausted that this initial twist might even disappear.
Too tired to even twist.
Essentially, yeah. They also point to a potential blockage of the posterior branch of the vagus nerve in situations of overwhelming stress or trauma, often physically manifesting as an inward tilting of the tailbone and a fixation of the sacrum.
Wow, very specific physical signs.
Mm-hmm. Subsequent levels describe a general reduction in resilience and the development of back pain as a consequence of these spinal and pelvic imbalances.
Back pain makes sense with pelvic issues.
Right. As well as a disrupted ability to properly regulate between states of relaxation and tension due to the presence of toxins and that underlying ANS rigidity.
Can't relax, can't tense up properly.
Exactly. Finally, they mention a shift in the distribution of blood flow within the brain that can negatively impact mood and higher cognitive functions.
Brain fog, mood swings.
Could be related. The fundamental message here is that identifying and addressing the root cause of the stress is essential for achieving any lasting improvement in these patterns.
Got it. You have to find the source. This idea of resilience keeps coming up. How do the sources define resilience in this context, and why is it so important?
Resilience in this context is defined as your body's inherent capacity to effectively recover from periods of stress, to bounce back.
Okay.
And as the sources emphasize, this crucial ability is often compromised by past traumas and chronic overload.
So trauma reduces resilience.
It seems to. These disruptions can create what are described as disharmonious vibrations within the body and its surrounding energy field, hindering the free flow of energy and information, including the healthy processing of emotions.
Disharmonious vibrations, that sounds quite abstract.
It does. But think of it as interference patterns that disrupt normal function. This diminished resilience then has the cascading negative effects we've been discussing on the immune system, the optimal functioning of our organs, and our overall sense of well-being.
Right.
The sources frequently note the presence of uneven tension patterns in the fascia, often accompanied by that pelvic twist we mentioned, as a common physical manifestation of vagus nerve blockage in individuals with low resilience.
So the pelvic twist is a sign of low resilience, potentially.
It can be, yes. They describe a potential progression from initial joint restrictions and muscle pain to more chronic issues involving internal organs and even the development of exhaustion and depression.
It really escalates.
It really underscores that profound interconnectedness between our brain, nervous system, fascia, our energetic field, and even the environment we inhabit. It's all one system.
And the sources really delve into the specific ways that both fascial and emotional factors can contribute to this persistent state of stress. It's not just about the physical structures being tight then.
Precisely. Disruptions within the fascia system itself, such as altered vibrational patterns stemming from trauma held within scars, diseased organs, or restricted joints, can disrupt the overall harmony of the body and place a significant strain on our regulatory systems.
So the tissue itself holds a kind of memory of the stress.
That's one way to conceptualize it. Certain areas of the body, including the neck, face, upper abdomen, as well as the atlas and sacrum, are particularly sensitive to these fascial disturbances.
Key areas.
Mm-hmm. Furthermore, the sources highlight how unprocessed emotions can become, in a sense, locked within the fascia and even the aura, consuming significant amounts of energy and effectively blocking our body's natural ability to self-regulate and communicate effectively within itself.
Emotions getting stuck? That's a powerful image.
It is. And it seems to have real physiological consequences according to these perspectives.
This brings us to the polyvagal theory mentioned in the sources, developed by Porges. How does this framework offer another way to understand our responses to stress?
Right. The polyvagal theory provides a really insightful framework by outlining three distinct stages, or perhaps states, in our body's stress response system.
Three stages.
The first stage is the ventral vagal state. This is a condition of safety, relaxation, and social engagement, where we are most capable of creative problem solving and connection. Our safe and social mode.
Where we want to be, ideally.
Ideally, yes. If the perceived stress becomes too much for this relaxed state, we transition into the sympathetic nervous system phase, the familiar alarm mode where our energy is mobilized for action, fight or flight again. This sympathetic activation can be productive, giving us the necessary energy for demanding activities. Or it can become destructive, leading to a constant need for intense stimulation and a feeling of restlessness and ineffectiveness. Kind of spinning your wheels.
Okay, productive versus destructive sympathetic states.
Mm-hmm. Finally, if the stress continues to be overwhelming, we enter the decompensation phase. This can manifest as either exhaustion, a state of ineffective muscle tension, and an inability to truly relax.
Just tense and tired.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or the dorsal vagal state, which is characterized by withdrawal, a sense of freezing and listlessness, particularly following a traumatic experience. The shutdown response.
Freeze response, okay.
Interestingly, the sources note that in cases of very long-standing chronic exhaustion, the typical pelvic torsion often associated with stress might even be absent.
Because they're past that point.
Perhaps. The system is just depleted. The key takeaway from the polyvagal perspective in the context of managing stress is recognizing our individual limits of resilience, which the sources suggest can be assessed, in part, by paying attention to the state of the pelvis.
Checking the pelvis for resilience clues. Fascinating. The navel seems to hold a really central and perhaps even surprising role in all of this, according to the sources. Why is it considered so important in coordinating the stress response?
Yeah, it keeps popping up, doesn't it?
Mm.
The navel is highlighted as a critical coordinating center for the entire stress response, acting as a kind of central switchboard for the body's regulatory system.
A switchboard, okay.
The sources even describe a specific navel integration exercise that's designed to activate a more subtle level of bodily awareness and facilitate the flow of energy between various key areas, the abdomen, pelvis, legs, heart, throat, head, shoulders, and arms.
An exercise to connect everything up through the navel.
That's the idea, yeah. To promote greater internal connection and balance.
And the sources even briefly touch upon a potential, though perhaps less scientifically conventional, connection between the unconscious nervous system and the concept of chakras, those energy centers from Eastern traditions.
Right. While acknowledging that some listeners may approach this with skepticism.
Sure.
The sources do briefly explore the intriguing possibility that fascial chains within the body might correlate with the concept of meridians in traditional Chinese medicine.
Fascia and meridians.
And that chakras, those energy centers often discussed in Eastern philosophies, might have some connection to the neural switching centers within our nervous system.
Hmm. Any examples?
They offer potential links between specific chakras and anatomical structures, like the solar plexus possibly relating to the navel and the third chakra, the vagus nerve plexus and the sacrum, perhaps linking to the lower chakras.
Okay.
The heart and its nervous system connections potentially relating to the heart chakra, vagal nerve connections in the neck to the throat chakra, and the pineal and pituitary glands may be linked to the brow and crown chakras.
Interesting correlations, even if speculative.
Exactly. Regardless of one's personal beliefs about these more esoteric ideas, the sources suggest that trying that navel integration exercise could still offer tangible benefits in terms of promoting mental and physical relaxation and a greater sense of internal coherence.
Worth exploring, perhaps. Finally, the sources broaden the scope, looking at the implications of stress on a larger scale, even touching on global stress and social behavior. How does our understanding of individual stress responses relate to these wider contexts?
It's a big leap, but the sources propose that the unconscious tensions that we hold within ourselves as individuals can contribute to states of confusion or regulatory rigidity, not only on a personal level, but also within society as a whole.
Individual stress affecting the collective.
That's the suggestion. They suggest that our tendency to become fixated on immediate concerns might sometimes distract us from addressing larger, more fundamental global issues. We get stuck in fight or flight collectively, maybe.
Hmm. That's a sobering thought.
However, they also offer a potentially hopeful perspective. suggesting that cultivating conscious awareness and promoting positive vibrations, if you will, at an individual level could collectively have a beneficial influence on society at an energetic level.
So individual change influencing the whole.
That's the hope presented, yes.
So to really bring it all together for you, our listeners, it sounds like this deep dive has really illuminated the profound and far-reaching ways in which stress impacts your body's ability to maintain its internal balance.
Definitely.
From the intricate workings of your autonomic nervous system all the way to the interconnectedness of your fascial network.
Absolutely. Gaining a deeper understanding of both those internal and external sources of stress and the potential consequences they can have is truly crucial.
Yeah.
It really encourages you to consider the holistic nature of your well-being, the interplay between your physical, emotional, and even, well, energetic states when it comes to effectively managing stress in your life.
And it certainly seems like there are many avenues for further exploration in areas like the vagus nerve, the importance of fascial health, and the practical applications of mindfulness techniques.
Oh, for sure.
That could provide even more in-depth insights and valuable tools for building greater resilience.
Definitely. These are all worthwhile areas for further investigation. For anyone who's looking to better understand their own stress response and develop more effective strategies for navigating the challenges of life.
So considering the profound and multifaceted impact of our internal state on our overall health and even on our interactions with the world around us, here's a final thought. How might a greater awareness of our individual stress responses empower us to cultivate more balance, not just within ourselves, but perhaps even in the wider world we inhabit?
A big question.
Something to mull over. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.